Howdy. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening and for watching. Wherever you are, we want you to know that no matter what you've done, you deserve respect. Even if you've made mistakes, you're lovable. And it doesn't matter your looks, skills, your age, your size, or anything. You're worthwhile. No one could ever take that away from you. My name is Juan, here with Mark. Kevin.
Hello.
And Dan.
You.
You gotta sit
up. Welcome.
And we like movies. As always, before we get to our film, please make sure to subscribe, follow, rate, like, comment, and review on whatever platform you are following us on. And while you're at it, make sure you have an alert set up so that you never miss an episode. We have some special episodes coming up, and those could drop at any time. So make sure that you don't miss out when they do. Okay. Today, we are reviewing and discussing the 2022 film Medieval, directed by Peter Jackal and starring Ben Foster. Now, before I give you the synopsis of the film, Mr. Dan Benamor, welcome. Thank you for joining us. It's an honor. Now, if you don't mind, please introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little bit about your podcast and any other projects that you're working on and want to promote.
Yeah, hey, I'm Dan Benamor. I do a podcast called Watch This Tonight, which is basically inspired by me being like about to pass out at about 8:30 p.m. every night because I have two small children and I never know what to watch, even though I have like every streaming service. And I needed personally a resource that I could just go to and flip through a bajillion different options and find something good to watch quickly. Is there storm clouds on the horizon? Did you hear that? Is that just me?
I don't know what that was. Sorry.
Anyway, so that's my show is Watch This Tonight. It's bite-sized episodes three times a week. The best things to watch on streaming when you don't know what to watch, you just click over to Watch This Tonight. I also run a podcast network, Voyage Media. We have a wide range of shows. We do true crime. We do scripted audio dramas and kind of everything in between. We've done shows. We have a show with Jane Lynch that's about to come out. We've done shows with Dean Norris from Breaking Bad. We've done stuff with Ian Glenn from Game of Thrones. So a lot of cool stuff going on over there. And I am extremely excited to talk to you guys about Medieval, which I somewhat apologetically think I forced you to watch for this episode.
Oh, it's not just me.
Don't apologize just yet.
Yeah.
But it's good that you have something that like pinpoints something to watch with all these streaming services, because I mean it's a beautiful thing, but my God, there's just so much to watch. So it's like you spend having all these kids and you got maybe like 20 minutes to yourself and you spend 20 minutes trying to find something to watch.
Exactly.
So I appreciate that. I listened to a couple episodes. So I definitely enjoy the attention to certain things that you're bringing up.
Appreciate it.
No doubt. I'm a fan. I definitely recommend it. If you haven't, go check out the podcast. The episodes, like he said, are bite-sized. They're short. And aside from, again, the recommendations for what to watch on the streaming services, there's also, you know, the special episodes where you do deep dives into an actor's career or a particular film, and they're really thorough and they're really fun. You have a lot of interesting and really cool insight. So I really enjoy it. Definitely go check it out. It's Watch This Tonight. Just follow everything Dan does because it seems to be very high quality. So. Okay, before we jump into this medieval hunk of metal, let me give you the synopsis from IMDb. It's short and sweet. Inspired by true events, the story of 15th century Czech icon and warlord Jan... How'd you pronounce his last name again? Do you remember? How are they?
Zizka.
Zizka, wasn't it?
I was getting a little jizz. I mean,
there's a way it's spelled, and then there's a way it's pronounced. I don't remember. Jean Ziska, who defeated armies of the Teutonic Order and the Holy Roman Empire. That's it. That's the synopsis. Medieval is directed by Peter Jakl, who is a writer, director, actor, and producer from the Czech Republic. The film stars Ben Foster, Sophie Lowe, Sir Michael Caine, Till Schweiger, Matthew Good, William Moseley, and Roland Mueller. The film was released on September 9th, 2022, and is distributed by Bioscope and can be streamed on Hulu. It was produced by JBJ Film, Genesee, and Doubletree Entertainment. No connection to the hotels. It has a runtime, as far as I know, at least. It might, the hotel might be producing films now, but it has a runtime of 2 hours and 5 minutes. It had a budget around $20 million. And so far appears to have a worldwide gross around $4.5 million. Medieval has a current Rotten Tomato score of 38% from critics, 72% from the audience. And the film's tagline is "For Love, For Honor." So, Dan, this was your pick. Can you please share with us why you picked this? What interested you about it? And again, give us your first take. And also even just tell us what you even knew about this film beforehand.
So I love that now in our streaming era, we have these movies where the movie comes out and you're like, is this movie like an old movie that I didn't know came out? And then you look up the year that it came out and you're like, oh, this just came out. I didn't even know this.
That's weird.
So I love movies like that where it's like the cast is really good and you're like, how did I not hear about this? And then you look into it a little bit more and you're like, oh, this is why I didn't hear about this. So I am the world's biggest Ben Foster fan. I think Ben Foster is one of the best actors on the planet Earth. And so I really was like, maybe it's like a diamond in the rough, you know, and I knew it had gotten mixed reviews, but I always want to make up my own mind. So I watched it and I feel like I shouldn't totally spoil my review here at the beginning, but there's a lot of stuff. I think it's a really fun movie to talk about. It might be more fun to talk about than it was to watch.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you. Yeah. It's going to be fun for sure. So before we give our initial thoughts, I just want to give the viewers a sample of what the experience of watching this movie was like. So because that synopsis was so short, as I was preparing my notes, I was like, let me try to write a to write this out just off of memory, just from what I remember off of the story. And this is what I came up with. So, I have, it's several centuries ago and Europe is in disarray. There is no law of the land and basically the strong prey on the weak. To top it off, the Catholic Church is also divided and there are two popes, one in France and one in England. I think it was England. It was either England or Italy.
It was Rome.
Okay, it was Italy. So there is a potential rightful emperor to unite the land and restore order, but he is in debt and can't afford to get to France and is in danger from others who want to kill him and usurp the throne. There's a small-time rebel and gun for hire who ends up involved in a plot to kidnap the princess of France, who is engaged to a guy who works for the brother of the king who is supposed to be emperor, because the kidnapping will help the good guys. But the bad guys get upset and they start to pursue the rebel, Jan. The princess, who is very religious, thinks that the rebels are bad and are committing atrocities and injustices against the people, but really it's her fiancé and his crew. She eventually sees the light and then falls in love with Jan. Jan has a brother whose son gets murdered.
This is a synopsis, man.
This is what I remember. It was all just coming at me, man. Hold on. Whose son gets murdered by getting impaled. Jan and the princess end up alone and split from the rest of their crew. They reconnect and the rebel alliance grows stronger. We learn that Jan is a master strategist. He loses an eye. Eventually, he faces off against the bad guy, the impaler, and after the princess leaps to her death, they win. He goes on to many more battles. He is never defeated, and he becomes a legend. If that sounded confusing to you, that's what it was like watching this movie.
One of the things that's sort of hilarious.
Kevin, what's your take? Go ahead. Hold on.
No, I was just going to say that's one of the things that's hilarious about it is that it's the purpose of the movie was the country of Czechoslovakia wanted people to know about their history, but I don't think any of us learned anything about that from watching the film.
Oh, man. Mission not accomplished.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
So let me see my one note here that I wrote. This is the Bohemian John Wick thrown in Assassin's Creed mixed with Games of Thrones, and half the script cut out because I had to keep rewinding because I'm like, wait, did she just run away? I don't know why they're catching her again. And there's things there I didn't understand. I didn't understand why the brother was against this guy and who was on which side. And then, ooh, there's a lion killing people. You got me. I love you. There's just a lion killing people. I don't know why, but it's happening. And then a lady falls off the thing. And then a lady falls off the castle, doesn't hit the rocks, hits the water, and dies. Don't know what happened there. And like I said, I'm like, I enjoyed
the rocks.
I didn't see her hit the rocks.
I thought she bounced.
But then I will say this. I enjoyed it because the last movie, anything would be an upgrade from that movie we saw. So this is actually...
Oh, come on.
I had fun. You boo me, but I had fun. And again, I didn't understand what was going on, but I liked it. And I will say this. It's such a tease of an ending because I thought we were going to get that battle at the end when he was showing off, and then it just cut off. And that was it. And that was my...
I mean, I liked how it ended. I was okay with it. So
you were just glad it ended.
So honestly, really, truly, honestly, if you take away the convoluted story, it wasn't a terrible movie. The action scenes were pretty cool. It was nice and gruesome. You know me. I like blood and guts and gore. So, I mean, that was there. It wasn't – this is the type of movie that after seeing it once, I can, like, put it on in the background and then, like, kind of look at the good scenes, you know, and then look away when they're triple-crossing and double-crossing each other. And then I'm like, oh, okay, they're fighting again, you know. It's not a terrible movie. It's not. It really isn't. I know we're kind of laughing about it right now, but I think there is something there. I think the Rotten Tomato audience viewers, I'm on their level. Not as high, but I'm seeing what they're seeing.
I disagree, man. I'm with the critics on this one. There were good things, you know, but I can't like a movie and I can't stick with a movie when I have no idea what's going on, man. So my three main issues with the film are, you know, that obviously the plot was very confusing. And so that's the first issue. You bring up a good point. Yeah, the action was good at times. It was definitely graphic and raw. But the editing and the fast cuts were dizzying. At times during the action sequences, things were moving at such a breakneck speed that it was discombobulating. So that's my second problem. And then my third one is that while I agree with Dan that Ben Foster is a fantastic actor, we reviewed The Survivor on this podcast and we were blown away, as well as other things that he's done. But in this one, while he brought a lot of intensity and gravity to the character, I felt like there was an emotional detachment that made his character kind of alien and disconnected and just kind of hard to cheer for and cheer on. I'm not sure ultimately if he was a hero or an anti-hero or just a guy that was good at war strategy, you know?
Just good at killing guys.
Just loves putting a sword through someone's throat. That's...
Yeah. So that's what I have. So one of my favorite questions, and I'll go to you, Dan, is, you know, so you picked this, you kind of, you know, you had mentioned that it was probably going to be bad, but you seemed optimistic. So at what point did the movie start to lose you?
With apologies to Ben Foster and Michael Caine, I took a note 1 minute and 51 seconds in where I wrote red flag. So they're doing the opening voiceover, which is already pretty confusing. And then they have only certain words.
Yes.
Did you notice that? It was only certain words. It was like fragments of sentences. It was very good because you were like, but why wouldn't it be the whole sentence instead of just part of the sentence? It was, it's just right away. I was like, I'm a little concerned.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm so relieved to hear you say that, because that monologue was so confusing, dude. And I was like, how can I be this confused this early on in this movie at just someone speaking? But it was so, I couldn't follow it.
You know what threw me off first? Michael Caine trying to have an accent. I'm like, dude, you still sound like Michael Caine.
Okay. Why everyone in this movie had a different accent?
So this is something.
Meanwhile, Ben, good.
I've been involved in movies like this, and it's a very common thing, especially in independent film, where you make a movie, and you know, a lot of times when you talk to actors, agents, and stuff, they're like, "Well, he's very material driven," and they're like, "All right, cool, we have $2 million," and they're like, "Yeah, he'll do it." So the money is really, I would say, more of a driving factor than probably most people like to talk about. And a movie like this, when you see it, like kind of a weird collection of people like, that are all recognizable, but maybe like, is Michael Caine like the most logical person in that particular role? So, you know, Michael Caine definitely paid off like a summer house to, you know, this was, I don't know if that Michael Caine needs more money, but I, you know, if he ever needed more money, like, you got it. Make it this.
He had an IOU. He owed someone. That's usually how I chalk it up.
That's really what I was thinking, that probably most of the $20 million budget went to. I mean, there were some big name actors. Matthew Good is also a fantastic actor, you know, from The Crown, Watchmen, and is it A Simple Man? I have it written down, but I can't remember. But yeah, a fantastic actor. That was my thinking, you know. And so when I heard you describe it, I said immediately, I was like, "Oh, Matthew Good," because I mean, there were just issues with his character. But yeah, I mean, they certainly got names. So I think probably between those big names, extras, and I don't know, because it all seemed to be shot in the same location. Like, just
it was $3 million space, just for the lion.
Oh my goodness. That was worth every penny, because that's the most vicious lion I've ever seen in the history of cinema, bro.
Was anyone surprised when the lion showed up in the end of the movie? I thought it was hilarious. They just randomly throw this lion in. I said, "Oh, I'll be seeing you later. I will be seeing you later." And sure enough, they made that happen. You know, I think for me, the way you're telling me we have a Czech Republic like director, probably writer, you have a movie that's just called Medieval. It's just, you know, Medieval is just so broad and, you know, general. But hey, that's the title of the movie, right? And then you have a synopsis that's literally just like a sentence long. So I'm thinking that this movie was written. And what's the language in Czech Republic? I don't even know. Is Czechoslovakian? That's what they speak. So I think, yeah, right. I don't know. Let's just say they speak a different language. So the script was written in that language, and then it's translated to English, and a lot gets lost. So I want to believe that they had a nice long name for this movie, and there was a title, but then you translated it, it just came out. Google said Medieval.
Oh no, it's a foreign sales agency thing. Yeah, no. What happens is you go to do the foreign sales, and then the foreign sales people are like, "Listen, we're not calling this Jan Žižka's, you know, triumph, because people
battle of death,
Germany or in Australia, glory, or whatever. They won't know what that is. So we're just going to call it Medieval."
Okay, good to know. See, I was like, "There's no way."
They just let ChatGPT handle that one.
Might as well. But I want to believe that with the the language, you know, that the translation, we lost some meat and potatoes, and that's why we just had like a bowl of rice, you know, we didn't have anything else. I want to believe that, man.
I do want to ask though, did you guys, the opening action sequence, I thought that was legitimately mm-hmm. good. Like, I really like the opening yeah. action sequence. Did that work for you guys?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I feel like that kind of set the tone, because when they got to their little battle tank halfway through the movie, I mean, I was like, and then we get to the end, and I enjoyed it, man. All the combat sequences, mm-hmm. All the action. I had no problem. Even with the lion, it was kind of just, you know, out there and random, but it still worked. I feel like it worked. It was okay.
I like the battle. I mean, I like what it displayed about. The guy apparently was really a brilliant military strategist and truly never lost a battle. That's what he's known for. So, and apparently what they showed of him in battle was probably the most accurate part of the film, except for, I think they, in the stuff that I read, it said that they were using guns and stuff.
What?
Yeah. But like that thing that he built with the wagons, that was like an early version of like a tank of what would ultimately become like a military tank.
Yeah, but in the ones he built in real life, he mounted cannons on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
that's amazing.
That would have been awesome.
Now, see, I wish we got that story. Like, let's watch this guy make all these things, like make that tank and come up with the strategy that makes him the genius that he is when it comes to this, you know? Instead, we're getting like the Keanu Reeves type audio or dialogue, that is, from him, where we're getting like one good sentence every 15 minutes, you know? It feels like we should have went that route instead of what we got.
It just kind of seemed to me like they just tried to do too much. You know, they tried to incorporate every element that they could into this film, you know, with a love story, people getting backstabbed, claims for the throne, you know, military strategy, like the bond between him and his brother and all their family getting killed, you know, like you got to just pick one thing, you know, or one or two things and just run with that, you know. But I think, again, it is kind of something, perhaps, you know, with foreign films, you know, and especially at this level, like the Russian film that we saw, I can't remember what it was called.
Major Grom
Plague Doctor, you know, where they're maybe trying to replicate something that they've seen from Hollywood, you know, with these genres, and then trying to make sure that they just include everything that's going to, you know, satisfy an audience. But in this one, it was like, you know, an inedible gumbo, you know, it just didn't work.
Do you watch I Think You Should Leave There? I Think You Should Leave with
no.
Cosmic Gumbo?
No.
No? Okay, never mind. I want to say that I think a couple of the actors and actresses that we got, I feel like if they were kind of moved around a bit, it would have been more, I don't know, it would have been easier to watch. I think the biggest problem I have was Till Schweiger, I guess, in his role as a king or lord or whatever he was. It was just, yeah, it was hard for me to get down with his character, because I'm just so used to him being like a badass in his movies. And in this movie, he's kind of like a whiny boy, you know. He spends the movie like I don't think he was successful in anything that he did, you know. So seeing him in his demeanor and his face, and you just know what he brings to the table, and he's playing this character, just it didn't work well. And then you got the other side, the guy who played Sigismund, I forgot his name.
Matthew.
Yeah, there you go, Matthew Good. You know, he, I don't know, I feel like we would have swapped their roles, you know, it would have been easier to digest. Because I didn't really find him menacing. I didn't find him that he really had any power. He was just kind of like, oh, I'm here. You know, I'm going to do what I want to do, and that's that. But it's just nothing he did was, it's not believable, obviously, but I don't know. It just didn't fit with the movie, if that makes sense. You know, I feel like if we would have moved some people around, we would have had a better cohesion with the story.
Yeah, I don't.
Might
I mean,
be shot in the dark there.
No, I agree with you. I just don't. For me, it's not the actors or the roles that they have, because those are magnificent actors. I mean, Till Schweiger was in Inglourious Bastards. Again, we went over some of the stuff that Matthew Good has done, so they can pull off whatever you throw at them. It's just, you know, their characters were not really fleshed out or written well. And like, for example, with Michael Caine, I mean, this, I don't say this lightly, but Michael Caine to me is greatness, but this might be his worst performance that I've seen, you know, but I don't blame him. You know, I blame the writing and perhaps the direction, but you know, he was out there just kind of saying lines, you know. I don't think they, you know, I don't think he even knew what emotion he was supposed to emote, you know, in some of those. So
you know,
I don't think it's, huh?
You know what Michael Caine's good for? He's good for delivering that one line that has just so much power and meaning behind it. You're like, man, that was good. And he delivered that towards the end. He had that one line. I said, there it is. That's why he was brought into this movie. Because he had that in Batman. I mean, you name it. Every movie he's been in, he always has that one line that just holds so much weight to it. And he's always the one to deliver it.
You're talking about the Batman line where he almost cries?
Yes.
Yeah, anytime, because it's like,
he
it's so upsetting.
He didn't want to see him die.
Yeah, if we see Michael Caine cry, it's like seeing your grandfather cry. Like, we can't handle it as the audience.
Dude, I mean, at that point, good.
No, I was just gonna say, you want to talk about memorable lines? Ben Foster has a line in this that will probably stick with me for the rest of my life. It was not good. I need a blacksmith and big nails.
Can we talk about, by the way, was anyone else really concerned about the sanitary quality of the thing they used for his eye patch when his eye first got fucked up? And they put, it was like a strip of cloth.
Yeah.
And it's like in the dirty cage water.
Rinsing it up.
And they're like throwing it on the ground.
Clearly, even he was concerned with it. Yeah, dude. Clearly, even he was concerned with it because he kept washing it off. Like, that was a big priority wherever they went. He was washing off the cloth. Thank God for the movie. Well, thank God for Gladiator, because if it wasn't for Gladiator, I would have been confused about the maggots. But I remember that from Gladiator. That's how he healed his arm.
I had to read up on the maggots. I'm like, what the?
Even though I knew it, like I know it intellectually, just watching it, you're like, I'm remembering wrong. Like, I didn't want to believe it like that.
Yeah. Well, even in the eyeball, in the eyeball is a whole nother thing. Russell Crowe got it on his arm. His arm was gashed, but in the eyeball, it's like, bro, that's just a few millimeters away from your brain.
With the knowledge of the maggots and whatnot, if I were to lose my eye right now and someone says, here, man, here's a plate of maggots, I'd probably still be like, I'm good. I'm just going to use some needles.
Take my eye.
I'm all right, guys. Yeah, just take my eye, shit.
But I think after the maggots, he didn't care about the sanitary condition of that cloth. He was like,
no, he cleaned it often. There was like four or five shots of him just cleaning that cloth. They wanted us to know that he was very hygienic.
My big thing about this movie, I felt like if they had someone just come in and write like 15 to 20 jokes and just sprinkle them throughout the movie, I think it would have been like a way better movie.
Yeah.
There's no humor in it almost at all.
Exactly. And I think that's where that was a sense of detachment with Ben Foster. It was like you didn't even believe that his own men like even enjoyed being around him, you know, because he, again, he was intense and he did those things well, but there wasn't really anything to kind of bring him back down to earth to human level. Although I think that's partly what they were going for, because they wanted to, again, share this legend with the world and kind of present this aura of who he was. So maybe that was partly intentional, but it's tough to go into a movie like this with all the problems that it has and not even really have a protagonist that like you're really getting behind, you know, and just liking. And again, it's not Ben Foster's fault. I mean, that guy commits and he doesn't phone it in ever. And he didn't do that here, but unfortunately the material just wasn't there for him.
I think they were trying to humanize him with his backstory with the Anna girl and how he lost her and everything. But then you lose it when he finally tells a story about her. And then Catherine's like, "Oh, now's the time to kiss you." I'm like, "You're just talking about." And then, like, to me, I just didn't feel like the depth of like the whole Anna backstory and this stuff. And then he has the worst luck with women because Catherine loves him, and then she dies, and you see his anger face. So, but I think all that was meant to try to humanize him, and it just did not.
The most human that anybody is in this whole movie is in the first sequence when they murder all those people, and Michael Caine is like the boss of the Expendables, essentially, in that scene. And he's like, "You're gonna let that one guy live?" And Ben Foster's like, "Yeah, fuck you, man." Like they clearly like shit talk Michael Caine a little bit in the beginning, and it was the most human, relatable part of the whole movie. Is them just like being dicks to Michael Caine.
That's true.
No, yeah, that is true.
And no, apparently, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, Juan, I think you hit it on the head, man. Because, like, I don't know why. But I understand that he was good at what he did, but they didn't portray that. And there was nothing about what he did that would cause these people to pick up weapons and go fight for him, you know? So I agree, man. I think had he had some more charisma or some more
– Exactly.
You know, pep talks or anything, you know, it would have – probably give him more light to his character, more, you know, just instead of just being one dimensional, you know, he has this other side. But it's just, you know, you're telling me that he's just the best at what he does, but you're not really, I guess you're kind of showing me, but you're not really showing me, you know? So that's a good point, man. I think you hit it on the head with that.
Yeah, and I think the word is charisma, you know, because you could be – there's a difference between strategy and leadership, right? Yeah, and so they showed us, you know, that clearly he was a brilliant strategist, but they didn't to be able to gather people together and, you know, lead this rebellion and fight off these superpowers and do the things that apparently the real-life character did, you know, he had to have had, you know, charisma, leadership skills, you know, a lot more than just kind of silently, you know, scowling and that sort of thing.
You know how in Russell Crowe for like the last 25 years has been talking shit about the Gladiator script and saying like, "Oh, the script wasn't good. We had to like make stuff up on the day, blah, blah, blah." Mm-hmm. You almost get the feeling watching this movie that this was like if Russell Crowe and Ridley Scott just like left it alone. Like, it's fine. Like all the great lines from Gladiator, right? Like, "What we do in this life echoes in eternity. You know, keep riding. You're already dead. You're in Valhalla." All the stuff that he does at the beginning and then throughout, right? When he's leading the guys and they're doing the Gladiator fights and you see how they rally around him. All the warmth of Gladiator. That's what's missing here. And that's intangible stuff. It's not really narrative. It's basically just charm. And the charm is what's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, it's that translation, man, in the non-English script, bro, we have like the bread and butter of dialogue, but they translated it over to our barbaric language, and now we're only getting, you know, one-liners from Ben Foster, our main character.
And so there's a scene, right, where they defend, you know, against this onslaught, you know, where they're being pursued and Torak, who the initial one where they first show the tank
with the tank,
tank, and he's defending that, right? Where they fend them off, and first he sends, you know, the archers, and then he sends the guys on the horses, and then he sends the foot soldiers, and they defend really well, but then they throw like the smoke stacks, and they disappear into that cave through the tunnel.
Whoa! They threw the smoke stacks.
First.
Well, you made your making.
Oh, they threw
like
the smokestacks first. Yeah, oh, but no, but then they burned
just to leave.
But then they burned.
I believe that was sage, first of all, that they were burning to cause all that smoke.
Does that come up often in your Dungeons and Dragons games?
No, when I want to smoke out my house, I light up sage. Duh.
Okay. Any-
No, but they started that to take out the visibility, and that's when he started sending them one by one. Well, no, I just want to clarify because they didn't set it up just to escape. They set it up to start the fight.
He burned the wagon at the end.
Yeah. And I thought that was to prevent the guys from following them into the cave.
Well, I mean, yeah, if there's a giant thing burning in front of you, you're not going to want to run towards it or run around it, you know, so.
Correct. So at that point, my assumption is that that's the only way into the cave. But then there was another way that we're never.
Just smoke them out.
Because then the bad guys do catch up to them inside the cave.
Yeah.
And murder
them. They picked the wrong cave. They picked the cave with 27 different exits and entrances. Yeah. That's not their fault.
But they did find that little piece of water where they could swim through.
He's not that strategic.
I did like that. That guy was my favorite character in the film, though. And I
what guy?
Maybe emotionally he didn't have a whole lot to do. But the bad guy, Torak.
Torak.
He was the heavy. Right, he was the guy going after. He wasn't the ultimate bad guy. Was Matthew Good's character that king? But he was his main guy. Again, he was the heavy. I thought he did a fantastic job. And man, did this guy have a hard on for impaling people? He just loved sticking a stick in the ground and skewering someone to that stick.
You know why I think you like that guy? Because when he's introduced, he meets Ben Foster, and they're basically like on rival Expendables crews. And he's like, "What's up, man? How you doing?" He's like, "Hey, what's up?" And then he's like, I got to go do this thing. Remember, we're doing this for God." And then he drags off a bloody woman, like who's tied to his horse. And so he is in no way. He's like the most cynical character.
Poor God.
But it's like we know from human history, obviously the Crusades and all that. So I think it's like we sort of in a weird way, at least he's not hypocritical.
Uh-huh. Don't worry, guys. I'm doing this in the Lord's name. I'm gonna start using that.
He basically like winks at him. He like winks at him and then drags off that woman.
He does. Hey, greater good.
Fridays, huh, pal?
Just another Friday.
Dude, there was also like a random nude scene that was like, they're just trying to fill a quota or something for this genre. Because it was just like, there was no need for it. It wasn't like there was, you know, it's not like Game of Thrones or something where there's nudity and sex scenes all over. It was just popped up out of nowhere. Like,
I thought that was funny.
Their legitimacy or something.
I actually made a note. I'm like, you know what? Look at us. I'm proud of us. We haven't done all these movies with nudity, and here we got this one movie, and I see some boobies, and I'm like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
You were scandalized by it.
We haven't had too many of those. Yeah. We haven't had too many of those movies. Our picks are usually pretty clean cut.
We almost got through this movie, and I was just like, "Oh, the girls would like this movie." I was like, "Nope, ain't happening."
Dan, do you know about Kevin and how his girls watch everything that we watch?
I did not know that.
Well, like I have five little girls, ages 6 to 13, and like they are huge John Wick fans. They love everything, but sometimes I have to watch it. And again, like I'm glad they did not watch this one.
I love
he was
how
literally,
you're
he
like,
was originally.
No, I was just gonna say I love how like It's like the hyper violence of this movie. That was not a concern, but the one pair of breasts, you're like, nope.
The two areolas were out.
We were opening weekend at John Wick 4. Like with my little 6-year-old in my lap cheering on these deaths, but I don't need to explain why he's in bed with another woman, and I don't need to.
Yeah, that's where we
it's
draw
true,
the line.
It's true, man. But I know it sounds so crazy, but it is true. Like, it's easier to explain someone getting shot than someone having sex. You know, why are they doing that? Well, you know. When this happened, and then you got the other side. Why did he shoot him? Well, because he's an a-hole, so he's gonna do bad things. So, you know, when you're that type of person, yeah, you're gonna be just that ass, you know. So I always think it's funny, but yeah, Kevin has his girls with him every movie we review. Well, most unless most, it's not, you most. Know, yeah.
It was nice to see William Moseley again. I'm sure he's been working and done other stuff, but he played the brother, Yaroslav. I had not seen him in anything since the two Chronicles of Narnia movies. He played the High King Peter.
That's Moseley, okay.
He's in all three, by the way.
He's in all three?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was nice to see him in this. Yeah, I'm sure he's done other stuff, like I said.
He's the older brother, right?
Yeah, Peter.
He was older?
Yeah.
I didn't know who was older. I didn't know if Anna was Jan's sister or his wife or fiance.
Oh, no, no. I meant Chronicles of Narnia. And...
Oh.
This is the kind of movie
my bad. Yeah, William Moseley.
Oh, seriously. But no, honestly, yeah, from that opening monologue, that was my red flag, because I was really like, am I tired or what's going on? Why is this so confusing? And then it just never let up from that point on. And I couldn't, I was hoping that Dan, you would be able to shed light on it, which you have. You've thrown some theories out there, but I was really like, is it the names? Is it that the narrative is just not unfolding well? Like, the film that crept up in my mind as we were watching this, which is we also reviewed, you know, some time ago, was The Duel, Ridley Scott, right? And, you know, that's a movie that's, you know, it's got some, it's weaving, you know, a story there. It shows you three different perspectives, and I never felt lost in that once. Meanwhile, this, right off the bat, you know, all hope was gone. And
you know what's funny? We all have kids. Yeah. Like, do you guys find that you're watching something and you're like, I never know if it's like I'm just actually legitimately tired or if the movie is making me tired.
Mm-hmm. No. If you're asking that question, the movie is making you tired. Because, I mean, I can watch Top Gun 4 at 3 a.m. and be wide awake, you know? So no, it's 100% the movie.
Yeah.
you guys remember in Dumb and Dumber when Harry and Lloyd were talking about double stamping a triple stamp or triple stamping a double stamp? I found myself laughing and shouting that out with all the double and triple crosses. I'm like, you can't triple cross, double cross. You can't double cross, triple cross. Like, they were just, everybody was going against everybody. And it started to get, like, I mean, I think once I couldn't figure out who actually was on whose side, that's when I was just like, okay, so this story, non-existent. And I think that's why I was able to enjoy it a little bit more, because I wasn't trying to sit and remember character names, because that was hard too. There were some names that popped up and I'm like, I don't remember that name. I don't know who that was, what they were doing. So it's just, it's a lot of work. This story requires a lot of work. And if you put in the work, I don't know that I could say that there's enough payoff that if you finish the movie, you go, man, that was really good, you know? So it's like one of those things, like, well, do you recommend this to someone or do you not recommend this to someone?
I think the action is really good, legitimately really good, and some of the better action I've seen in this kind of movie. And I think everything else is a little tough.
So, is this enough for you to recommend to someone?
The kind of work that you're describing that this movie requires, you'd have to pay me top dollar, okay, to put in that work. I mean, I'm talking about watching the movie with the script in my hand, having a flowchart, taking notes, you know, doing like the web, like in the crimes, you know, where they're fun.
I was going to ask. If you have a friend who's a professor
of European history who could sit with you while you watch the film, I think that would be the ideal way to watch it.
But
meanwhile, he's going, "Hey, none of this happened in European history. I have no clue what's happening."
On a serious note, you know what's another element that this movie doesn't have that movies like this always? It's a necessity. Is the character of Jan, right? No, his boys, like his crew. There have to be some memorable characters, right? You see it in Gladiator, you see it in The Patriot, you see it in so many movies like this. Like there's the main guy, but like his buddies or his crew, they got to have a bond, and those guys, at least one or two of them, have to be memorable. In this one, none of them were. And there's even the one guy
Conrad. He's the one that
backstabbed him?
Yeah.
He was the
only one that was somewhat interesting.
There was one guy who was like the big guy, which is an archetypal thing in these movies, the like big, extremely brutal guy.
With the beard, right?
Bites a guy's nose off. I don't know if you noticed that. and then later, when he betrays him, I was offended. That's what I was like. He bit that guy's nose off. I like that guy. And now I'm upset that he betrayed him. That was the only one that I really remembered from the crew.
Yeah, I thought that was funny when he was biting his nose. I'm pretty sure he had a sword in his hand, so he chose his teeth over a sword. I mean, I don't know why he went that route, but he totally did. You know why I was okay with that scene? You know why? Because money makes the world go round. So those dudes are like, you know what? I don't care about helping this woman. I don't I just want my money and
follow the money.
Go.
Yeah.
So when that happened, I was a little okay with it. But then like everything that transpired after, it was just like, oh, whatever. I mean, you had a chance to make something interesting and it didn't go that way.
About what Juan said about the crew, the one person who stood out to me was the crossbow guy.
He stood out to me. The whole movie.
But then at the end, right before the lion scene, when they get saved by Jan, and Jan goes, "Freddy, cover us." I'm like, his name is Freddy? The whole time. I was just like, what?
I did not even pick
Yo,
that
Freddy.
Up. Well, we got Jan, we got Torak, we got Freddy over here.
And even though the way that some of those guys died might have been memorable, their deaths though weren't portrayed really as significant. So that's also something missing from that aspect of the film with those characters.
Like, I would have 100% thought that Jan and his brother and him having to put his brother out of his misery. What, not his brother, I'm sorry. That was his cousin,
nephew.
Right? Nephew, right. Having to put him out of his misery, there would be some form of emotion there, you know? And I understand he did it to, you know, take him out of this pain that he's feeling, but no tears were shed. There was no like, hey man, I'm really sorry I have to do this and I don't really want to. He was just like, he said what he had to say, slowly pulled out the knife and just stabbed him with it. And that was it, you know?
That's true. But what I was questioning was, is that the best place to stab him for like a quick death?
I didn't know that.
What, maybe the throat or something like that. But the sides feels like he's just going to continue bleeding out.
He stabbed him in the liver and then let the juices from the liver soak into his spleen. And he knew he would die six to eight hours. He'd be dead. That's the best I could do, bud. 16 hours.
how the Romans did Jesus, just punch it outside.
But he didn't die though. He was alive.
I know.
That hey Dan, that could have been your funny moment, you know, if after that they go in the house and you just hear him outside. Ah! Like, can you come back out and stab me again? Towers.
I'm in a lot of pain.
Guys, an inch to the left would have killed me.
Oh, it hurts.
Before we have to talk about that final scene, right?
Do we have to?
Catherine, you know, meets her demise. I was completely blindsided by this sacrificial act. I thought she was getting up. I was expecting a speech, you know, that everyone was going to, you know, stop, and then they were gonna, after the speech, hug and shake hands or something.
She's no Michael.
Bro, then she just
she threw up the deuces.
She was done with the movie. She was like, I'm out.
I thought she had a better plan. I wasn't, Kevin, I know you said, or was that Kevin that said they didn't see her hit the rocks?
I didn't see her bounce, bro.
She bounced like a half inflated basketball, bro.
It's like the Zapruder film.
She bounced right off those rocks. Yeah, we're going to have to rewind and show that clip.
That's why he carried her. She was still alive. And then
I think she was still alive because they thought that someone could jump from that height and slam their head into a rock and still survive while drowning in the water. But, you know, at that point, we're what? An hour, 2 hours and 7 minutes into the movie. We're just supposed to take that for what it is. There's no.
Yeah, she definitely hit the rocks. She definitely had a broken back after that. But
I don't know about broken back.
No, nah, come on, that fall that was a high fall, bro. And she like went head first.
But if she hit head first, then why would she break her back? Ow! I hit my head. My back's broken.
Her column, her spinal cord. All right,
fair enough.
Well, the answer is she didn't hit anything. She went into the water. But go ahead.
Okay. Well,
I don't know
maybe
enough about trauma.
Go get a high definition television and watch that again, because you'll definitely see her hitting the rocks. But no, the character though was again another example of unfortunately bad writing and getting lost in the middle of everything, because there were actually interesting things going on with her. She actually was the character that had the most evolution throughout this story, right? Where at first she was really innocent. She thought that, you know, the kings were really noble. They wouldn't do anything to hurt the people, which was probably a little bit too naive for her. But obviously, she's also like really religious, and at the beginning doesn't even like Jan. So her character actually has somewhat of a nice arc, but it also feels insignificant. Like in the midst of everything else, it I don't know, there was something about that just didn't land. She also,
you know,
kind
it didn't
of
land?
Like
falling in love with your kidnapper, that didn't land. When she decided to say, you know what? You took me from my home. I love you. Yeah.
Well,
that's
but it fit. No,
like,
but it works. Again, it works because it's happening at the same time while all these other walls around her are crumbling down.
But
right?
What
so
works?
She's,
what charisma is Jan showing that this woman's like, well, my God, yeah. I want him to have, like, I want to have all of his babies. No, none
she's
of
like,
that's
look,
not
I
happening.
Put these maggots in his eyeball. Just, I'm committed at this point.
I put maggots in your eyeball. You need to put some in me now. Come on, let's go.
She saw the dude kill like 25 people, bro. It got her going.
I guess, man. But there was nothing else that showed why she would all of a sudden fall in love with him. So when that whole love thing popped up, it was just like, it's the icing on the cake, baby.
No, I know what you mean. I think in my head, I'm filling in the gaps. Like I could see circumstantially how that could happen. But yeah, the story does not do a good job, you know, kind of displaying that. I definitely think that rat deserved more. You know, we needed to know the backstory, how that rat died. Because
all the rats around him are chilling. That one's dying with maggots eating him from the inside out.
Well, he had a hole on his side. Like, I was genuinely curious. Like, did one of the other rats take a bite out of him? Was he sick?
Probably.
Stray bullet?
Probably. All the above, bro. All of the above.
All right. Well, I got nothing more on this one. Do you guys have anything else? Speak now or you know, hold your peace.
I'm thinking. No, I think we've discussed everything that we can.
One thing. You go first.
No, please. You've been quiet this whole time.
I did expect, because they showed when he lost the one eye. Yeah. And then when I read about it, I was like, oh, man, they should have shown him lose the other eye.
Come on,
In real life, he lost two eyes. And I'm like, they should have just shown him winning battles with no eyes, man.
There goes one of my fun facts.
Oh, yeah!
Got it! Yeah. Got him!
Wipe it off the board. But okay, but real talk. How are you a strategic general, like, genius if you have no eyes? What are you, Daredevil now? Like, I don't get it.
No, that did happened he, at the he... end of his life.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
it was like okay. later in his life.
All right,
he never all right. lost Kevin, a battle, bro. He never lost a battle.
But Kevin he was still really winning battles. No, but he was winning battles while he was blind. Like,
I need eyes for you.
His
fools.
Strategy. Who knows later on?
My strategy. Don't use my eyes. I'm better than everybody already.
He was a seer.
I love it. That's amazing. I love it.
Dan, you got any final thoughts on this bad boy?
No, I think, last thing I would say is probably that unsanitary piece of paper is what got him with that other eye at the end of his life. No, look, I mean, beautifully mounted movie, great production value, great battles, everything else so-so. I think probably worth listening to us talk about it, but maybe not worth watching, unfortunately.
Good point, though. There was some good cinematography. There were some shots. I love that shot of the galloping horse. It was really cool. And there were other good moments.
The one that gave Kevin blue balls.
What?
He was so upset that he didn't get to see more from that slow motion.
Because, dude, that and then the pan up, and they saw you see the ring on his thing. See the army's coming. I'm like, whoa! Oh. Here we go.
Dude, there was a funny shot where they were like battling on a cliff, and like the horses were falling into the water, and one looked like a CGI horse, but I was like, man, are they really dumping these horses in this water?
No, and then the next shot, horses.
No, bro. The next shot, you just see like this, like a stiff horse. It was clearly like a dummy or something. It was hilarious. If you rewatch that. The horse is like kicking, and then as it falls, it's just a stiff horse, like a plaything.
They threw the plush down. There you go. Yeah, I promise you, not throwing real horses into the water, man. Sorry.
All right. So even though Kevin spoiled one of my fun facts, which I only have two.
He did. Unfortunately, usually he has more fun facts. Yeah,
there was not much. It kind of seemed like there were fun facts with Jan on his Wikipedia page, but I just couldn't commit to doing any significant reading on that.
Is it time for fun facts?
Yeah. I'm just doing the intro for it, but no.
Considering everything that he's done, yeah, I could see how.
You got to figure out how to lower the volume on that.
My brain.
It could be like 50% lower.
Melted.
Where
am I?
Fun facts.
What year is it?
Number one, he eventually lost his second eye, too.
Damn you, Kevin.
The next one.
Number one, too.
Yeah.
Awesome.
My second fun fact, again. Don't take this to the bank. It's not verified.
Another one.
But it says that Knights of the Teutonic Order wore women's underwear to motivate them to not get killed so their corpses wouldn't be discovered wearing women's underwear.
I could see that 100%. 100%, bro.
I mean, I just love the scene of, like, soldiers afterward coming across a dead body and being like, look, Jerry's wearing women's underwear. Ha ha.
Oh man, Jerry's dead. Wait till they see his G-string, idiot.
Like they had Polaroids back then or something and would send a picture to his family. What is this?
Not but apparently his husband dead, but he was wearing a thong.
Apparently they favored garments made of silk spun from the Chinese silkworm.
Of course.
Those are fun facts. Those are today's man. Fun facts.
I'm sorry, all right, Kevin Ruwa, but I'm not sorry because that was awesome. I love when you're.
We are going to start with busted. You as far as a rating. So we do a 1 to 5 Little Jerry scale on this show. 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. So what is your rating for this film?
Medieval. I feel like I'm looking Ben Foster in the eye and disrespecting him. So, but I have to give it a 2. It's just the reality.
Yeah, you look him in that one eye.
I would have gave you 3, but you only have 1 eye.
Speaking of the eye, though, it was good makeup. It was good makeup. Good effects on that scar and that whole open gash.
Yeah, I was wondering how that was going to look for the rest of the movie. I was wondering if they're going to do like CGI or actual like real effects, because you know, in 2023, you don't see real effects that often. Psst. Who's up next?
You go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right, it's me. All right, so for Medieval, starring Ben Foster, who is. I still believe is a great actor, and he has a lot of movies that I enjoy, and I feel like he's always been a supporting actor, and now he's kind of pushed past that, and now he's getting a lot more leading roles, and you know, I feel like what he was given, he made the best out of it, but it's just, you know, it wasn't enough to make this a movie that you could say, man, Ben Foster is great in everything he does. Nothing against him, like Juan has mentioned throughout this whole podcast. No knock on him, because, again, we don't know the source material that he was given. But it's still a tough pill to swallow. I am one of those people that can kind of put something on and, you know, somehow watch it while even though I'm not watching it. And this will be one of those movies that I could see myself doing, because there were some interesting combat scenes. The introduction of the quote unquote tank, that was a great scene. You know, everything they did with that and how it led up to that, you know, they traded prisoners, not to, you know, give too much of the story away, but they traded prisoners, and then, you know, they ended up getting quadruple stabbed, so they got, you know, ambushed. But that scene was great. It was really enjoyable to watch, and even up to the end when she decided to bounce herself off the rocks, it was still great. And I think what Juan said made a good point. I think Torak was a great character. He was a good antagonist. And you don't have too many of those often. He was just doing what he felt like he needed to do. And that was enough for his character. So, I don't know, man. It's tough. This one, it really is tough. Just the title alone is laughable. Medieval. it's just such a weird title. But I really think at the end of the day, I'm going to join Dan here and give 2 Little Jerry's. I can't even give it 3, because I feel like at 3, I would mention this to someone that I don't plan on it. I don't plan on it. I feel like this is just, you know, one of those little really, really, really rough diamonds that I'll keep for myself.
No, I don't think anyone's going to be fighting you for that diamond.
Okay. That's why it's really, so, really rough.
So well said.
Hey, thanks, man.
I agree with Dan and Mark. I can't see myself recommending this to anybody. Maybe if someone's like, hey, I just want an action movie where I don't really care about stories, want to see some good stuff, maybe. But even then, I don't plan to see it again. I was thinking maybe if my brother wanted to see it, I'm like, nah, there's so many more things I could tell him to watch. But it wasn't horrible. And being the most expensive Czech film ever made, you know what? I'm like, good for them. Like we said with Major Grom, like, it looks like they're coming a long way. They just got to work on that narrative and that, you know, that story, getting it going through, getting the hooks in. So I'm going to give it a 2 also.
Wow. Okay. All right. So now's when I revealed to Dan that I'm the biggest snob here.
Because I thought you were coming with that 5.
He took a couple courses in college.
I did take a couple film courses in college. I mean, again, while there were some good things, I'm not going to say it's the worst movie I've ever seen or anything like that, especially when it's foreign films. I mean, I definitely give them the benefit of the doubt and applaud them for the effort and encourage, filmmakers to keep on.
Is this labeled a foreign film?
It's what?
Well, yeah, it's made from overseas.
Okay.
No, but is this
just because it's American actors? But yeah, it's a foreign film.
Oh, it is. Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah. Inquiring. So, but still, I mean, I base it off of the experience that I had viewing this. I would not watch this again. I wouldn't recommend it to people. I would recommend other Ben Foster films. There were some really shoddy performances, including Sir Michael Caine, which is extremely surprising, although it's just a testament to some of the other things that were lacking, I feel, like the script and maybe some of the direction. So for me, it's going to be just a 1 out of 5 for this one. So that's Dan, Mark, and Kevin, all with a 2 out of 5, and Juan, the biggest snob in the room, with a 1 out of 5. Dan, before we go, I do want to ask you 2 questions. Do you go back to the flash forward days with Ben Foster?
Sadly, I don't.
Oh, man. Check it out, dude. Just like Shia LaBeouf was brilliant on Even Stevens when he was on the Disney Channel, Ben Foster started off on the Disney Channel with a show called Flash Forward. And, dude, he was hilarious. That's why it's so surprising that later in his career, he went for the dramatic, heavy, really dark roles. Because, I mean, he was goofy in this. But he was hilarious. It was really good.
Yeah, I feel like his first entrance into movies, he was always the, I don't want to say bad guy, but he was just always opposite of the main character. But it seems like he's kind of burst out of that that genre that he's been placed in, and now he's getting actual leading roles in movies, and it's nice.
He played some darker roles, and I think he was trying to peel off the Disney from
from Flash. I think most of those Disney actors and actresses do that, though, right? They feel like they got to shed that Disney. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe
Juan, I never heard of that Flash Forward show. I thought you meant the ABC one that came out after Lost, which was a Lost, where they had Flash Forward. I'm like, I don't remember. I saw that show. I was here looking at it. I'm like, oh, man. I don't know. He's not. But yeah, it's a Disney show. Different. I apologize.
Yeah, different. It's all right.
Second question for you, Dan, is as a Ben Foster fan, like you said at the beginning of the show, outside of Hell or High Water and The Survivor, is there anything from Ben Foster that you would recommend as essential viewing?
Totally. 310 to Yuma and Alpha Dog. Those are probably his 2 most fun, crazy, awesome performances.
I forgot he was in those. Yeah.
Yeah, Alpha Dog was huge for him, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll link trailers to some of these so that people can view those instead of this one. All right. Well,
so, I'm shocked X-Men The Last Stand was not mentioned.
Yeah, Archangel, right?
Yeah.
Why would we mention that?
It was a joke, man.
Dan, can you give us a preview of maybe some of the upcoming episodes for Watch This Tonight? What are you working on?
If you haven't gotten enough of us talking about Medieval, I also did a Medieval episode that's coming out tomorrow. And then I don't know what I'm going to do next. I record the show almost immediately before I release it. So I'm still casting around for what's going to be the Wednesday and Friday episodes for this week. So I guess I am always looking for stuff. There's a show called Silo on Apple Plus that's about to come out that I probably will cover.
Okay. How many things are you watching each week? Cause you do three episodes a week, right? For this podcast.
Probably watch like five things a week. Yeah. I basically end up not finishing a lot of stuff. If I finish a show, I really love it. Cause I have to keep coming up with shit for my own podcast.
I mean, I think we're all on the same schedule.
Oh, yeah. Like,
after the kids go to bed, then we can.
I have so many seasons that I've only watched the first two episodes. It's wonderful.
All right. Well, this has. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'll say, but yeah, Dan, I've caught a couple episodes. Like, such a good show that he puts on, and the fact that it's so short, I could catch them and then just move on to doing other stuff.
Really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
That's all I want to say.
Yeah, for sure. If you're listening, if you're watching us, we appreciate Dan being on with us. This is super generous of him to. We've never met. We just kind of connected on Twitter, and he was just totally for coming on and hanging out with us, talking about this movie. So it's been a lot of fun. We really appreciate it. And again, if you haven't done so yet, I'll definitely link it in our description to go and check out. Not only Watch This Tonight, but anything else that he's doing. I'm sure it's excellent quality. He does a great job. So thank you so much, Dan. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll get to do this again at some point.
Love to, guys. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Maybe we don't let you pick the movie next time.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
All right. See ya.
All right. See you.
Love you.